is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
This morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Monday, the 4th of April, 2022, and you are on the clock with Aaron Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. Well, it's Monday. That means it's time for another episode of The Bahamas, where we talk about all the things that have happened in this place. Oh, boy. Called The Bahamas. If you see me today, I am wearing my Keep Calm and Carry On Smartly pink cami. I almost chose violence this morning and put on my Bonfire Red cami, but I decided not to. So if you see me today, know that I'm encouraging everybody to not choose violence. Even in the face of all of the stress, all of the righteous ire, all of the frustrations, all of the obvious examples of people not doing what they know they ought to do when they know they ought to do it. So join me and let us choose peace. Let us choose peace going forward. It's a conscious and deliberate decision. It's hard every day. Every day you have to commit yourself to choosing peace over violence. And I think that's something that we should collectively commit ourselves to doing. I have a guest in studio joining me this morning is Ms. Tenille Burrows from Rise Bahamas. But before we start talking with Ms. Burrows, there's a couple of things I want to talk about. First of all, there is a local fruit desert out there. That means there are wide swaths, like areas of the island, where you cannot find local fruit for sale, for purchase. In some instances, you can't even teeth it good. This is surely a sad day. But more importantly, I want to point out that we got a real problem. There's a lack of local fruit in the market, particularly in spaces where it was a constant. It's tamarind season. Somebody try selling me a bag of tamarind for $5, a small Ziploc bag of tamarind for $5. I was very upset. Because I know that there are tamarinds all around the island, all around the country, just rotten on the tree. It's just tamarind falling to the ground. Nobody picking it, nobody collecting it, nobody harvesting it. But tamarind is money. Like our friend Bagon, the rapper, say, tamarind is money on the ground. There's so many applications for tamarind, locally, regionally, globally. It's like a $1 billion industry just sitting there. So I thought to myself, surely, by now, 2 years into the pandemic, the Ministry of Agriculture and Marine Resources and now Family Island Affairs, which is very important here, and the Ministry of Finance would have created a specific permit for roadside local fruit vendors, witnessing the lack of produce in the market. Let me tell you all how scarce tamarinds are in the market. Bahamians was calling me all weekend to find out why I ain't bring them no sour tamarind. People are craving tamarind so much that they don't care if it's sour. They just need it. So Ministry of Agriculture, Marine Resources, and particularly Family Island Affairs and Ministry of Finance, we need to create a mechanism to encourage the continuation of the trade of local fruit. We see that taking, and I say this respectfully, Rastaman off the road has resulted in cultural loss, agricultural loss. And y'all got to figure out what you're going to do about it. And trust me, you may not have felt it yet, but I'm a vendor and I am feeling the effects of the lack of local fruit in the common market. It's a big thing. Now, another important story in the news. Remember, travelers from Nassau and Grand Bahama will no longer need negative COVID tests to visit family islands. Well, look here, that's great because I need to figure out how I'm going to get down to Ragged Island and rescue these thousands and thousands of tamarind people keep telling me just going to waste in Ragged Island. Now, dear Ragged Islanders, I's a bold Nassauvian. So maybe what you could do is you could put them on the boat yourself and send them to Nassau for sale. Make some money. Start a little industry. But trust me, we're missing that tamarind up here in New Providence. Another note. Yesterday morning in the food store, I witnessed a customer. She was exiting the food store. She got a little upset. The security guard asked, why you got to look at what you looking at? What my receipt for? You know? And it reminded me that I know why. Security guard, stop you at the door, ask you for your receipt, look at it for 3.5 seconds, look at you, look at your trolley, and then sign it and tell you to go. If you have a receipt, a food store receipt, you can pull it out right now. Look at the bottom of a receipt. There's a line item that says, number of items. So when that security guard grabs your receipt, he looks at the number of items you should have in your cart or in your bags. And then he looks at your cart and your bags and tries to get a sense of how many items you do have and whether they align or not. It's a quick test. And if the customers do what they're supposed to do, right, then it could be done relatively easily and effectively. Now, I ain't mad at you. Because if you don't know what the security officer doing at that door, then you're probably what we call good people cheering. But the next time you get upset with your local security guard, why he's stopping you and looking at your receipt, because it don't seem like he's doing anything, just bothering you and wasting your time, there's a strategy. There's a system in place. And they doing something. And let's respect them for that. Because if we developing this habit where we treat everybody in retail as if they're the new slave. And people in retail have gotten to the point where they tire of talking to customers. They tire of communicating at all. And you see, some of them seem frightened, as if they lack self-esteem and self-confidence. But more importantly, because in the face of belligerent and many times ignorant customers, they are left just swallowing their feelings, whether they're right or wrong. So let's shift our attitudes, how we interact with retail staff. I tell you, some interactions could just be unbelievable and frustrating. But try to get a sense of, practice some empathy and think about what they must be going through, how difficult it is to deal with customers constantly, every day, and then remember that every customer is not as polite, thoughtful, exposed, mindful, educated as you may be. Another note, gang and gun violence continues. We're just putting this a note in here. Something, you know, following up on the weekend. I think we've had at least 2 murders this weekend. But last night, in my kitchen, I heard what was fireworks. Thought to myself, what's the day on the calendar? And no festivities, shouldn't be fireworks. Thought it was fireworks, went to bed, woke up this morning to find out that it was a shooting. Now, the fireworks thing is important because I can't believe that these boy them could afford that many bullets. Like, what y'all doing to afford bullets? I know y'all don't make bullets here. How y'all getting all these bullets? Anyway, good morning to my guests, to Neil Burrows. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am good, thank you. I had to sort of get that out there. Let's check this mic for a second. Yeah. Grab this one here next to you. Slide that one around. Let's try that again.
Mic check, 1, 2.
How are we doing, producer? Is good? Need to adjust the volume? All right, so my producer's gonna come and hook you up in a second. Well, did you guys know, I told you all last month, March is like International Women's Day and month, and I was gonna sort of ease off of the Women's Day talk, but did you all know that April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month? And so we're gonna start off April by continuing this conversation that began in March. And so I've invited Mr. Neil Burrows here to have a conversation, not about sexual assault specifically, but about violence against children and young people and sexual violence. And after the commentary last week, I wanted to ask a couple of questions to the general public. But I wanted to have somebody who is far more expert than I am in issues dealing with children, dealing with children's rights, dealing with advocacy for children and protection for children from sexual violence, physical violence, and I'm going to add structural violence. So let's do this again. Good morning, Ms. Burrows.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Listen,
thank you for joining me in short notice. So, April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and I found this article from December 6th, 2021, I think in the Nassau Guardian, but definitely in the local papers. Over 30% of sexual assault cases dropped. More than one in every 3 sexual offenses that went before the Supreme Court in the last decade was discharged because in most cases, the long wait time for trial discouraged victims from wanting to move forward, according to the Director of Public Prosecutions, Garvin Gaskins, who called for the establishment of a court to focus on sexual offenses. Listen, that was stunning to me when I read that article. I'm going to repeat the title so people can go online if they want and find that article. Over 30% of sexual assault cases dropped. The article goes on to say, the Bahamas has a long-standing problem with sexual offenses. This was highlighted by the 570 cases involving sexual offenses that went before the Supreme Court in Nassau during the last decade. And while there might have been outcomes, none were listed for 141 of those cases, according to the Criminal Registry Department's records. Do you and Rise Bahamas have any stats on unlawful sexual assault? None at all. Is the government producing these stats? Is there a government agency that is responsible for collecting that data and making it available to the public or to civil society?
I don't know if it would be national security or social services, or maybe both.
Mm-hmm.
Police and the courts, I guess, would be responsible for collecting that kind of information. I don't know where it's disseminated, if it's just among them in the inter-department sort of thing, or if they certainly don't publish it to the extent where we're used to seeing these statistics. I know on an annual basis we have reports from the Minister of National Security detailing the number of child abuse cases that they dealt with the year prior.
Right.
And they would usually break it down whether it's sexual violence, incest, negligence, or physical abuse.
Absolutely. And those stats for 2021 probably haven't been released yet, you think?
And the number that he listed for 2017, I believe, was in the 500s.
Yeah.
So it now confuses me. It causes me to feel like, are these stats reliable? Or, you know, who should be the actual source for getting this information? It's not really clear.
All right. One second. Producer, which mic should we use?
Yeah.
All right. Cool beans.
Mic check again. There we go.
Oh, there we go. We got sound.
We can make music on this mic.
Right. So what I... The reason why I wanted to read that is because I realized that a lot of people are not aware of the statistics.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people are aware of the cultures that exist around us, right? We know that young people and young girls are being groomed. We know that they are being harassed. We know in our communities we see situations we're not sure of. You know, we feel uncomfortable with. But until you see the statistics.
Right.
And until you see the numbers, you may not get a sense of how overwhelming the issue is or why the advocates, stakeholders, and people who work on these issues are so passionate about them.
That might be an idea for a campaign in and of itself, gathering the statistics, doing the research, and actually putting it out there to the public on a consistent basis, annual report or something like that, outlining particular cases of child abuse, neglect, sexual offenses, and things of that nature. And it should probably carry through to other departments as well, where we need information or the information would be useful to have as a person in the general public. I think that as government, they sometimes keep things to themselves, and we don't really know exactly what's going on. For instance, the Minister of National Security, I believe, at some point said that there is a sex offender registry, but it's not available to the public. I'm not sure who it is available to, but that blows my mind. It's like, how is that even possible? So there are things in existence that we are not even aware about, and more importantly, that we don't even have access to.
And so with this matter, with the accused and convicted Pratt, 40-year-old man, that was found guilty of unlawful sexual assault.
Yeah, he pleaded guilty.
He pleaded guilty, right, with the 14-year-old, who we also find out is also pregnant.
Or at the time was pregnant.
At the time was pregnant, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things that... the Minister of National Security referenced was the plea deal, right? That this sentence of 4 years is the result, and the DPP reference is the result of a plea deal.
Well, I'm no lawyer, but if I were a prosecutor and knowing that the child was impregnated by this man, what I would have done is said that we don't want a plea deal for this person, because what we should do is actually have a DNA test on the child that was born, the baby, and that would prove paternity and prove guilt.
Mm-hmm.
So if they, let's say they had gone ahead and just allowed him to plead innocent, they could have still come back and charged him if they had done this DNA test. Is that something that is practice? Is this in law? Does it need to be added to law? It's something that I think certainly should be looked at in cases of statutory rape, where the child, the girl, becomes pregnant, there should be mandatory DNA testing of the child to determine paternity of the father. And if it's a case where it's an older man who impregnated the girl, that should be an automatic judgment.
Absolutely. Now, think about this, particularly with the introduction of the people call the pesky defense attorney. And, you know, referencing the fact that the vast majority of people are concerned that the Minister of National Security, in his official capacity as Minister of National Security, still seems as if he's operating as a defense attorney, right? But I imagine that the prosecution may hesitate for a couple of reasons, right? And one is that what if the child is not a product of intimacy between this 14-year-old child and the person who's accused? No, I'm saying in an instance like that.
If it's another partner.
Right, and that then sort of will complicate the case. And
it wouldn't complicate it. It would prove, well, you're right. I didn't think of that.
Thinking about some of the issues that the minister was trying to raise, right? Like the minister is saying, look, we are seeking the easiest and the quickest route to justice, to a conviction. Whether the conviction is 6 months, a year, 4 years, the most important thing is a conviction, right? And so I could appreciate them not encouraging the DNA test with the concern that if the accused is not the father of the child, then that then aids his defense slightly, or it can result in tarnishing the reputation of the victim, right? Which defense attorneys may attempt to use to secure a win. So that's a reason why the prosecutors would probably be resistant. But in this article that I referenced, over 30% of sexual assault cases dropped, the then DPP, Garvin Gaskins, indicated that a separate court, mm-hmm. right,
mm-hmm.
would be a great strategy
mm-hmm.
to deal and to reduce the time that victims and the accused have to spend in limbo waiting for the determination of the case, right?
In 2012, I believe it was, which would have been 10 years ago.
Right.
The Bahamas Crisis Center appealed to the government to establish a separate sexual offenses court and a separate family court, which
uh-huh.
I think the family court we have, but we don't have the sexual offenses court.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, the long wait times for trial discourage victims from wanting to move forward. That's something that we really have to look at. I remember even hearing stories from the crisis center where they said minors were supposed to testify against their perpetrator of a sexual offense. Sometimes it was a matter of incest or a perpetrator that was a family member, and the child appeared alone. So the crisis center had to go and send someone to stand with the child because the family itself
refused to stand with the child.
Yeah, and those sorts of things break my heart. It's unbelievable that you would even...
And imagine, we know a common practice is making the victim in a case, in an accusation of sexual assault or rape, that the police will make a victim sit in a room with the accused, not in the courtroom, not before a judge, not the case hasn't been sent to the courts, but in this initial primary investigation stage, the police will make a victim sit with the accused. But what happens if it's a child victim?
Right. And we also look at the Child Protection Act, and Tavari Smith, he is a proponent of this. He's from the Juvenile Justice Program.
Young lawyer, right?
Yeah, Boswick and Co., I believe. He is always advocating for the implementation of the Minors Advocate Office that was prescribed in the Child Protection Act, where that would prevent these sorts of incidents from happening, where it empowers not just people who are social workers, but other people who have qualification to stand as an advocate for the child in court.
Wow, good stuff.
Yeah.
Wow. Anyway, producer, let's go to a break. There's a song on that playlist I gave you by my guest today. At some point, we can play that song. She don't know about that. I had created a playlist for the end of... and you just happen to be one of the artists on the playlist. I'm going to play that at some point when you can take us to a break, producer. But before then, let's read these texts. The problem with them checking receipts is they allow white people to walk out without checking their receipts. That's not true. Don't say that. And like what you implying or causing the audience to infer is slightly different from what actually happened. Sometimes they let me walk out with my receipt too, and some people describe me as very, very white and, you know, British and QC, but that's neither here nor there. sometimes what you will see is that the security officer can watch you, right? They could see you just checking out. There was no problem. They're watching your demeanor. They think you're cool to go. You're a regular customer. Bang, bang. That's all. Good morning. I, too, have an issue with the security and receipt because I feel that this is initial indicates that he has verified exactly what is in my card, and it is exactly knowing what is customer service here in the Bahamas that I have the issue because of the potential frustration in attempting to rectify a problem if items are not packed. I understand. And I think for food stores, maybe they need to consider if they can improve the entire system. But don't get mad at the security officer. Good morning, Aaron. The first part of today's discussion could not be heard. Thank you. We're going to get back to that. Thank you, Texter. And I think everything is up and running now. Producer, when you're ready, and when we come back, we're going to take a look at the Prime Minister's statement, because I'm going to say this, to be honest, I think it could have been stronger. I think it was strong, but I think it could have been stronger. I think it was clear, but I think it could have been clearer. And on the other side of the break, let's talk about that. Producer, when you're ready. Don't squeeze the mango. Don't squeeze the mango. From my lemon skin, you know, don't squeeze the mango. Don't squeeze the mango. Don't squeeze the mango. From my lemon skin, you know, don't squeeze the mango.
Know how important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services, from click and pay options online or e-commerce options. We're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches. Fidelity, we're good
for you. One thing there is no debate about is that BTC has the best rates. Now, the best rates just got better because you pay half the price of the other guys with your BTC home internet and mobile services combined. Switching to BTC is a no-brainer because I pay less with BTC and get super fast internet with speeds up to 600 megs. The other guys, their internet only go up to 105 megs.
Get all the internet you want at half the price when you bundle your home internet and mobile. Visit a BTC store to make the switch today. Conditions apply.
Here we go. Jay. S. Johnson Insurance agents are the best. Reliable service, we've been on the scene, protecting since 1919. J.S. Johnson Insurance has the best. Always. You're always covered me. J.S.J. S. Johnson Insurance, peace of mind.
Like what you're hearing on the show? Want to support the conversation? Sponsor On the Clock today. Call Janet Lees at 302-2304. That's 302-2304. Be the solution. Sponsor On the Clock with Erin Green, where she dissects, we discuss, and you decide.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
From a long time, yeah, let me hit you with it like a tom-tom. That man you got is a bum-bum. What a bum-bum, what a bum-bum. All he good for, BT gum-gum. What a bum-bum. You think he in it for the long run? When he really, really
good yawning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You're on the clock with Erin Green, and my guest today is Miss Tennille Burrows. And if you remember that song is by somebody named Tada. Remind me of Tennille Burrows very, very much. Tennille, when you and Ta, is this what you'd be up to? Rise Bahamas and focusing on child protection and issues surrounding the safety of children?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. And so tell us briefly about Rise Bahamas.
Okay. Rise Bahamas was established in 2014 from a 48-hour camp out on Russin Square, where we had a demonstration calling for government accountability, good governance, transparency, etc. That was the same weekend where we interviewed, what's his name, the former Prime Minister Minnis on his position related to public disclosure, and he said that those who do not disclose should be locked up. So we ran with that. And so we pushed public disclosure. We've been pushing that for a few years. And we also been pushing heavily Marco's law because our pillars are child protection, good governance, as well as community empowerment.
Absolutely. And those things work together. Yeah. I mean, I need people to see that focusing on reducing corruption, increasing transparency and accountability and honesty in governance will, it won't just trickle down, right? But it will intentionally, it will seep into, more than a trickle, right? It more like of a flow into broader society.
Yeah.
Wow, good stuff. Although, you know, as a cultural stakeholder myself, I always get jealous when people who should be making art and culture are focused on growing the country. Because you could also be growing the country through your art.
Or I could be growing my pocket, living somewhere else and doing it.
Yeah, no, don't do that. I mean,
who knows what the future holds, but for now, I feel like my calling is to be here doing what we're doing with Rise Bahamas.
Absolutely. And let's just take a moment and say shout out and congratulations to Joey Gaskins, who was recently appointed the Regional Public Affairs Director for Disney Cruise Line. So we say congratulations to Joey Gaskins on your appointment. You certainly qualified. I don't know if I like who you're working for, but certainly you are a qualified candidate for the job. And so we congratulate you.
I have a birthday shout out.
Yeah, man.
Want to send a very special happy birthday to Ada Kenriva Bethel, Miss Take Back the Bahamas. She's our treasurer on Rise Bahamas board.
Okay.
And I don't know how old she is today, but I just want to wish you a happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Happy. Come on, back me up, Aaron.
Oh, no, I need cake first. Happy birthday
to you.
Happy birthday.
Bite, you say bite day.
Yes,
you
of say, course. That's how
the
you
ancient
get
mind. The ancient mind one is the best.
Yeah, yeah.
You remember?
We don't eat up all the food. We don't drink up all the rum. That's all I. But I don't drink up all the rum. I can't remember
that's
nothing
it.
Else.
It's all over.
Hey, man. Happy birthday
Ada.
To Ada. Congratulations on making the. She ain't gonna tell us how old you are, but we expect cake. Thank you. So let's get back to this. Like I say, the text, one of the texters asked if you could repeat a bit about what you were talking about earlier. So you reminded me that it's Child Protection Month, not just Sexual Assault Awareness Month.
Yeah.
And you also talked briefly about the Sex Offenders Registry.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And indicating to us that at the moment, the way that it functions, that the registry itself is not accessible to the ordinary average citizen.
Apparently, which is confusing to me that this whole process went through without any, as far as I know, extensive stakeholder
and real public consultation. Yeah.
I mean, you would think the Bahamas Crisis Center and other groups, FOAM and things like that, would have been brought in and say, hey, let's get some consultation on this issue because it's a very sensitive issue.
Yeah.
And I feel like it does deserve that sort of attention. And if they want to backtrack and allow us to do that, I think it would be preferable and then move forward with understanding how to make it public or if to make it public or whatever determination is made. It should be a consensus, not just by the government, but a consensus with civil society and nonprofit groups that are doing this work.
Right. And it should also, I mean, I like the word you use, consensus. I want to use it in a slightly different way. It also has to align with the way that other ministries and agencies, state and private agencies, function, right? So you have a sex offenders registry. You don't make it public. But then you have what I would call dysfunctional or non-existent town planning protocols, right? And so it turns out I'm in an area. Somebody builds a school. I want to send my child to that school. I don't realize that right next to the school is a sex offender is living, right? Or a school pops up, and then all of a sudden a liquor store pops up right next to my school, and it turns out that there's a registered sex offender working in the liquor store right next to the school.
This is why I say it really has to be thought out. I don't think we should just take any existing legislation from any region wholesale. I think we need to look at the nuances of our country and our population, our communities, and mm-hmm. make something that makes sense for us. I certainly don't want to encourage any vigilante justice.
Right, and so that's the greatest concern about an open registry, right?
And that is a valid concern, but we need to explore it. Like I said, the right players need to be at the table. The mm-hmm. Bahamas Crisis Center, Foam Bahamas, Rise Bahamas, etc.
But listen, because this would then be another example of a system that we have corrupted, right? Or to use a strong word, bastardized, because we, the state, refuse to expend the energy or resources necessary to make the system work properly. As opposed to doing that, we are going to redefine the system and lessen or remove some of your rights in the system, or, right, we reduce what the system can produce for the people it's intended to serve. You don't have an open registry because you can't protect the offender. But you can't protect the offender because your other systems are derelict and dysfunctional. Why should my right as a parent or a citizen to a life free of violence be somehow curtailed or redefined because you refuse to spend the resources necessary to provide the function you say you're providing?
But look at this. The government in 2011, I believe, Dr. Bernard Nottage, yeah. who was, I think, then shadow minister of national security because the FNM was in power at the time,
mm-hmm.
he created this idea to do a Marco's Law.
Mm-hmm.
Marco's Law is comprised of two components, the Amber Alert or the Missing Child Alert System and the Convicted Sex Offenders Registry.
Mm-hmm.
So the government in 2013 took this to Parliament. And the law was passed. This was after the PLP came back into power. And they called it Marco's Law. And that's been 9 years? I can't even count. 9 years since this law has passed. We still haven't seen the Marco's Alert fully activated and brought out to the public, rolled out to the public.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't seen the Sex Offender Registry. So I wanted to segue into this thing about repeat offenses.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a lot of the times in cases where minors are abused, neglected, sexually abused, raped, there are people perpetrating these crimes that have already served sentences.
Right.
So if you look at Marco Archer's case, I'm looking at an Eyewitness News article. They said in this article, this is the third time Goodman had been sentenced for having inappropriate relations with young boys. Apparently, they didn't find any evidence of sexual assault on Marco.
You mean sexual intercourse or penetration?
Exactly, because right. that would be the only thing you can trace.
Because an assault...
See, so we don't know if molestation happened.
Right, this is what I'm saying. Because technically, there's a difference between the charges assault and battery, right? We use them interchangeably. An assault is you could just make somebody fear, right? You put them in fear that you're going to harm them.
Okay.
You approach them.
A threat.
Right, you throw your hand towards them. Battery is when you actually hit them, right? So when did people say, well, a sexual assault didn't occur, right? Like a sexual battery didn't occur, but surely he assaulted them sexually.
But check
he
this out.
He just didn't penetrate them or engage in intercourse.
In 1993, Kofi Goodman was convicted of unnatural carnal knowledge against a 10-year-old boy, sentenced to 3 years in prison. Let's see this trend.
Hold on. Say it again. Unlawful carnal?
Unnatural carnal knowledge against a 10-year-old boy.
Right.
Whatever it is. I don't know what that means. If he laid a finger on him, that's enough for me. In 1996, he was sentenced to 18 years in prison for attempted murder and causing bodily harm to another 10-year-old boy. This is all before he came out and heinously murdered Marco Archer.
Cardinal knowledge make me think...
You're stuck on that.
The first offense, yeah. I'm stuck on the 3 years.
Right, but they look like they... he got 18 years for attempted murder. That's a whole different charge.
Right, right.
3 years is ghastly.
Yeah.
Appalling.
Yeah.
Discouraging, disheartening, everything you can call it. Like, these children in the Bahamas are not safe, and I will not hold my tongue if international agencies start asking what's going on. I won't play nice.
Yeah. I think that surely this country has too much resources, too many resources, too much monies for us to be sitting here saying we just can't figure out how to fix this system. We can't figure out how to put the infrastructure in place necessary to keep children safe, which is why the comments from the DPP and the Minister of National Security are so concerning to me and others, because it sounds and feels like another instance where you are saying it's so hard to do our job. It's so hard to administer these laws. And y'all keep demanding it of us. We got to make it easier for us to do this, right? Versus spending the money and using the resources you have available to you to create change. See, that's why I had the question there. I know you look at the question as a little weird. Is the political class aware of itself, right? I want to ask these people, do you understand the power that y'all have to initiate the creation of legislation to protect children, young people, minors, and the vulnerable? Do y'all understand how much money y'all have and influence and resources to create shelters and temporary housing initiatives, low-cost and tiny house projects, to create temporary employment and apprenticeship programs? But do you all understand, like, are you aware of yourself, and do you understand the power that you have to shift culture within your own class, your own peer set, within your own communities, and cause politicians, people in government, to act better and to do the right thing?
You could find the money to be in Dubai and host the Royals, right?
Exactly.
You could find that money when it pop up or whatever. That becomes priority, it seems. Are the priorities in place?
Because for a politician to come out to the public and say, man, listen, I know the law say that 14-year-olds can't consent, but you can't see them out here consenting. We just gonna have to shift the law. And I would suggest that you focus your energy on prosecuting the people who are ignoring the law. Prosecuting, under the Child Care Protection Act, parents have a legal responsibility to protect their children from early sexual activity, from prostitution. Certainly parents should not be prostituting their children themselves. Right? When will the political class understand that there is a large burden that they have to bear, or, you know, a burden that they are responsible for in the creation of societies where children could be safe?
Now, you asked the question, which is a very valid question. Do the powers that be, the political class, understand the power that they have to initiate the creation of legislation to protect children, young people, minors, and the vulnerable? They do have the power. But what I'm going to ask now is, do we understand as a people the power that we have to initiate the creation of legislation to protect children, young people, minors, and the vulnerable? Are we bystanders that will intervene, or will we be silent witnesses? Like, thank goodness that in that 14-year-old who got pregnant by the 40-year-old man's case, there was a bystander or a neighbor that intervened and called the police. Mm-hmm. I thank you, and I can't thank you enough. The Bahamas Crisis Center has a 24-hour hotline. You can call them. The police have the Department for Child Protection Unit. You can call them during regular work hours. There's a social services hotline. Just do a quick Google search on your phone for the child abuse hotline, and it should come up. We can intervene. That's one way we can participate. Mm-hmm. We can share posts on social medias. If there are organizations that you believe in, Form Bahamas, Rise Bahamas, go on the page, like the page, share the page, comment, do posts, hashtag Rise Bahamas, hashtag Marco's Law. You have a voice. If you look at Support the Puff, that was a Bahamian movement started by a young girl, and it went viral. Millions of people around the world saw her story when she was, you remember that, Support the Puff?
Yeah. Is it C.R. Walker?
I believe so.
C.R. Walker, yeah.
And the girl went to school with her puffs in her hair, and the principal gave a hell about it. And she ran around. She stood up for herself, and it went viral. Mm-hmm. We got to stand up for each other in the Bahamas. Let me repeat. If you're a bystander, or if you know someone who's being abused, call the Crisis Center Hotline. Aaron, you could pull that up, please. Mm-hmm. If you're following a group that you believe in, Rights Bahamas, Rise Bahamas, share the post on social media. Use the hashtags. If you want to participate in protests when they pop up, you know, I see Candy Gibson was protesting when the Royals were here.
Demonstrating,
planning shelter, calling for shelters and protection of women and children. You can join demonstrations. Mm-hmm. If you want to jump on board, some groups start petitions that you can sign. And at some point, we might have a petition related to the implementation of local government in New Providence. That's the campaign that we're going to be working on with Rise Bahamas mm-hmm. coming up shortly. And I think that also has an integral part to play in what we're talking about, because now we have a local level administrator in New Providence that we can go to, as opposed to having to run behind ministers or members of parliament or things like that. An extra layer of government that is more aligned with the needs and the wants of, you know, the people. So get your pens out, get your text fingers ready. Keep this number handy. You might not know anyone now, but you might buck up on someone and you see a fight going down or a child being abused by an adult. Call the Crisis Center hotline. They're available 24 hours. The number is 242, of course, 328-0922. I could give you another second to grab a pen or get your typing finger ready to put down the Crisis Center hotline. If you know anybody that's being abused, you could even call in anonymously to social services and report what you see, and social services has the duty to then go and investigate. You don't have to reveal who you are. The Crisis Center hotline, though, is 328-0922.
Absolutely. Let me read a couple of texts here. Social services has a roster and regularly goes to court to stand guardian in juvenile matters. There are various areas that are rostered on a monthly basis.
Good.
And if you are interested in supporting, working with, volunteering with that system, contact social services. I know that there's at least one civil society organization that is lobbying and working on the creation of a code of ethics and a standard for people volunteering with young people, working in civil society organizations and volunteering with young people. I think that's absolutely a must.
I want to shout out Flow Bahamas. They're a volunteer agency, and then Volunteer Bahamas is the Governor General's project from the previous administration. So we have now, you can also volunteer. I forgot that was a way to participate. So
yeah.
Bahamian people, let's get on board. Let's not just sit back and say, oh, I was abused at some point. I'm not over it. I can't do anything to change it for anybody else. Come on, that could be a form of therapy for you. Get on board.
Wow. There's a text here that says it's adding some more data on Kofi Goodman's, would be his criminal record. Says he was also, this text here says that he was also convicted and jailed as a teenager.
Wow.
For the rape and murder of a young boy, but that we need to verify that. I haven't seen it on text yet.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. And a number of other incidents. Thank you for that text. Another text. Good morning. There is Crime Stoppers Bahamas if you want to report anonymously. Now listen,
that's a good one too.
Right,
they've been advertising, they've been putting it out there publicly.
Yeah, make sure that your people are trained though, and they don't, because I've had people come back to me and said that they've called there and people have asked them for their
personal information,
which is not supposed to be the case.
Exactly. Yeah.
So if that happens, what I would tell you to do is hang up.
Because I remember the ad say they give you a pin and you can use the pin to call. Blah blah blah.
Right.
Blah. So it's a pin, not your name.
Hang up and call back and see if you get another agent and a different response. And then Tanil, I got a text here that's a bit, it's a rough one. That information about the police is not true. Please stop giving false information like that. In a sexual assault investigation, no matter the age of the victim, that circumstance will not happen.
The police?
Which they're referencing something that I said when I said that.
Why you make it sound like I say it?
No. I just say it's a rough one. I let you know it's a rough one.
Uh-huh.
When I said that police officers will make the victim sit in a room with the accused.
Okay.
And so I'll say to that texter, you tell me the date that it stopped happening. If you're telling me, texter, it's not happening right now today, perhaps I'll accept that. But you need to tell me the date that that practice stopped happening. Because I can find you then victims.
So how did you become aware of it?
I was informed by people working with the Crisis Center, people with other organizations. I've had people say that to me, that is what their experience has been when I've been connected with them by other advocates, right? It's a practice that has happened. And so texter, tell me when it has stopped. Tell me when you all stop it. And tell me what your procedures, because I can tell you a bunch of other things as well that concern us in this space about the protocols for engaging victims of rape, sexual assault, this new term we have, unlawful sexual assault. Oh boy. I just, this is a rough one for me, Tenille, because I'm trying to present balanced discourse, right? Try not to run over on one end. But I want to say to the people that are arguing the, you know, the pedanticism, arguing the semantics of what is rape and what isn't rape. Let's start here. Rape is rape. And then there's the legal definition of rape, right? And let's make a distinction between the two of those things. And let's say that surely the legal definition of rape can't be the primarily accepted definition of rape. Surely we the people determine what rape is, and then the courts determine what they can prove, right? So to all of those people that have been breaking, you know, their backs, playing with semantics, rape is rape. And then there is the legal definition of rape. And as a society, we're going to focus on the definition of rape, not the legal definition of rape. Because then you're going to tell people that their experiences are not real unless a court tells them their experiences are real. We have a lot more to say about this issue. The last thing I want to say as we run out of time is some of y'all are picking a very weird hill to die on. And I think y'all should reconsider that. Wow, Text, I will share that information with my guests. Thank you very much. Ms. Burrows, thank you for sitting with me with what has become, I didn't realize it, a very difficult conversation for me.
Okay.
It's heavy, you know?
It is.
And it's a lot that I want to say. And I also got to balance myself, be mindful, respectful, and measured in my words.
I think people could relate to this topic, though, because all of us were children at some point. So just remember when you were a child and when you needed protection and when you needed somebody to stand in your corner.
Yeah. And for those of you in the audience, thank you for tuning in. If the conversation got a little too choppy, a little too disjointed, I apologize for that. There's just so much to talk about, and all of it is important. Ms. Burrows, I got to ask you to come back and join me again. I may have to make you a co-host for these discussions, particularly for the month of April, which is Child Protection Month. It's also Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And then don't forget, it is also Autism Awareness Month. Thank you, Tenille. You want to give them the number for Rise Bahamas Dead quick?
The email is risebahamas@gmail.com, and we're on Facebook as Rise Bahamas.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Guardian Radio AM, is up next. Have a great day, Bahamas.